Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the Ides of April, Anno Domini 2017, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And in 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, here comes the news. But before we give the news, I would like to announce that Jazz 90.1 met its pledge goal this time around. We're very, very pleased and relieved and very much honored by all those of you who were kind enough to become members. Thank you so, so much for tangibly proving that you believe in this show.
And how much they like us.
And how much they like us. We appreciate it more than you can imagine. And out of the 3,911 people who download the podcast every month, about 50 of them became members. So thanks to those 50.
Yes, thank you for your support and show how much this program adds value to your life and maybe saves you some money that you felt that you should turn around and reciprocate and support us.
And to the other 3,861, we're not going to say a word. Okay, that too. That would work, too.
Didn't say anything.
All right, to the news. As expected, Microsoft named May 9th as the date it will issue the final updates for the debut edition of Windows 10 that launched in 2015. 2 months ago, Microsoft had extended support for Windows 10 version 15.07. Microsoft now labels feature upgrades by year and month. So 15.07 is the seventh month of 2015. And that's just like what Ubuntu has been doing for years.
Mm-hmm. So nothing new.
Right, and it extended that support from March, when it was originally going to run out, to May, but did not specify the date. Many people anticipated May 9th as the end of support because that's the date for the month's Patch Tuesday. The May 9th retirement was quietly announced on several support documents, including the Windows Lifecycle Fact Sheet, which lists several kinds of deadlines for various versions of the operating system. Another document put it plainly: the time has now come to end servicing for version 15.07, the support document read. Stopping support for Windows 10 editions, Microsoft released the 4th on Tuesday, is an important part of the company's software as a service model. The company has pledged to support an individual edition such as 15.07, not for 10 years as policy required for, say, Windows 7 or 8.1, but only for 18 months or so. That mandate ensured Microsoft would not need to craft security patches, fix other bugs, or add new features for an increasing number of versions. By the time Windows 10 15.07 slips off the list, it will have been supported for about 21 months. Part of the reason it lasted longer than Microsoft stated norm was because the firm issued just one feature upgrade, version 16.07, in 2016. The next Windows 10 edition, version 15.11, could be purged from support as soon as early October. That's because Microsoft has committed to, 15.11, of course, came out in November of 2015, has committed to simultaneously supporting just two current branch for business builds. At the release of the N+2, the company starts a 60-day or so countdown. At the end of 60 days, N drops off, N+1 becomes N+2 becomes N+1. Solve for X. Under that policy, N would be 15.11, N+1 would be 16.07, which was released in August of 2016, and N+2 would be 17.03, which is this month's feature upgrade. Version 17.03 will likely be promoted to the CBB in 4 months. The CBB is the current branch for business, which means August. 2 months more would put 1511 support demise in October. Users running 1507 must have upgraded to 1511, 1607, or 1703 by May 10th to receive future security patches and other fixes or enhancements. Windows 10 1507 will not suddenly fail to boot, however, or degrade, as do copies that have not been activated with a product key. The only exceptions to this policy will be you can still run it, it just doesn't get any patches, including security patches. The only exceptions will be customers whose devices, and that makes it now like XP and Windows 7 and all the other versions you're running out of band. The only exceptions will be customers whose devices are running 1507 from the long-term servicing branch, which is a special release track available only to organizations using Windows 10 Enterprise. Also, new processors will be blocked from receiving updates on old versions of Windows. So if you've got a processor that was put out in the last year and you're running a two-year-old version of Windows, you're not going to get updates either. I don't care how new it looks.
So, and that's the Skylake and Kaby Lake computers. And we're already seeing that happen, that the latest Windows update will not install on the old processor. Steve Gibson was talking about that on Security Now. He bought a Haswell, giant, massive Haswell computer to run Windows 7 because he intends on running Windows 7 for at least 10 years, if not longer. and we're getting reports of people that cannot install the latest Windows update for Windows 7 on a brand new processor.
Yep, I am. Looking at the likelihood that I will soon have a new Linux machine because my Windows machine that I use at RIT is no longer going to suffice. It's no longer going to upgrade. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, whoever Francis is, May 9th is original Windows 10's retirement date. And your choices are, no, I don't want to upgrade. Well, I guess I'll just have to upgrade. I have no idea what I'm running, and when what now? So far, we have 31 votes, and of course, when what now is the one that's running. But we know you'll have more to say even after you voted. So if you scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums, and the second forum is the poll discussion, and currently at least, the first item under poll discussions is May 9th is the original Windows 10 retirement date. We've got three posts in there so far, and we'd be delighted to have yours. And then, of course, you can also give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. It's interesting what Microsoft is doing with these new versioning things that it's doing. This is all leading up, of course, to where they will start charging a service fee, a subscription fee.
Which you'll probably hear later on this summer.
This summer or next at the latest. Yeah. And the basic, people have been saying for a long time it'll be 2018, but Microsoft could move it up.
Oh, yeah. Especially the way they're hurting for cash. Anyways.
Exactly. Well, they're not hurting for cash at all. Well, they're hurting for more cash. Their investors are saying, what have you done for us lately?
And it has been nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
So what that means, of course, is that Microsoft has said this for a very long time now, that Windows 10 will no longer be something you buy, but something you rent. And in order to keep running it, you have to keep paying. And if you stop paying, you stop owning it. They will shut you down, and you better have a good backup. That's all I have to say. So, at any rate, the idea here is that Windows 10 has versions, and you can get the latest version just by doing a standard update, like the one that came out on Tuesday, and be covered. Or for those of you who are not upgrading for whatever reason, the likelihood is that you will not be covered in just another month or so.
Oh, well, that's the way it goes. And, I mean, they've been upfront with it to a point.
I mean,
you know, they've been a little underhanded on it, not really coming out, but they have in other aspects, but it's been very low-key. as right. to, you know, making folks aware of the fact that this is going to be rented software now. You're going to lease it.
That's right.
You're going to lease it for so many years or whatever you pay for, whatever plans they come out with, and that's what you're going to get. After that, you know, you folks might start looking at Chromebooks.
That's right.
And other operating systems because, believe it or not, Chrome, like they, we reported, I believe it was a couple weeks ago, Chrome is getting more and more of an edge on Microsoft.
Right. No pun intended.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Edge. Right.
Yeah.
Chromebooks are outselling Apple machines, and Chromebooks are outselling everybody in education.
Yeah. Yeah,
and we're seeing people use it more and more, and that makes
sense.
Well,
the school systems, it's great. They can put it on a tablet for a kid, and they don't have to worry about viruses, spyware, malware, and it protects itself. So if it doesn't look right for the original image, and they don't give the students the right to change anything or that on it,
right?
So, you know, it's fully protected.
And managing them is ridiculously simple.
And yeah, and the cost.
And they're cheap.
Oh, they're super cheap.
Yeah. For those of you who run in Windows 10 and don't know what version you have, if you go to the Start menu and then type in About Your PC and then select About Your PC, look under PC for Edition to find out which version and edition of Windows your PC is running. And if you look under PC for system type, you'll see whether you're running 32 or 64-bit versions of Windows. So that's pretty easy. And as soon as Steve finishes setting up the YouTube channel, he can
put that link up.
Put a link up for us. So that'll be good.
I'm trying to find a link that tells you what supported processors you can run on the new Windows update.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good point, too.
That's a whole separate story. We have certainly the Windows life cycle.
Well, that's the other thing, though. And this is what people have to be aware of. I've had a few folks go ahead, you know, over the past, I'd say, 6 months, go ahead because the machine said, oh, yeah, you can run Windows 10. But what they didn't do is go back to the actual manufacturer and find out if they recommend putting Windows 10 on that particular, in this case, both of them were laptops.
Yeah, the next sentence is, but you may not want to, and you may not like it.
Well, they don't, no, the manufacturer doesn't even support it.
Yep.
They do not recommend it. It will not run properly. It's very unstable. But yet, another version of that particular laptop will run okay. So you can't just generically say HP. All your HP laptops out there will, you know, within the past 3 years, run it, no problem. Nope.
Mm-mm. Yep.
It doesn't work that way.
You know, just because, you know, it used to be we could say to somebody, we've got, all you need is this speed processor, this much RAM, this much hard disk space. Now it's how new is your processor, and are you prepared to buy a new computer in 3 years? If you're going to run Windows at all. So, that's kind of the way that works. It's going to be a whole new world out there for you Windows people.
We actually had a customer this week bring in a Windows XP machine because she got a fake virus warning. Fortunately, it was a fake warning.
Yeah, I was about to say.
And what really surprised me is it had no malware on it. Windows had no malware on it.
Has it never been on the internet?
I guess not.
Wow. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We will get back to you as soon as we get back. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have patiently waiting on the line, Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. Talk about win what now.
Yeah.
I, I had Tuesday had a surprise update to the Creators Edition.
Yep.
My computer had been on all day, and I had to leave, and I came home to see there was an update running. Thought it was a run-of-the-mill update because I really didn't get a warning, and so it was inactive, so it started to update. And then I noticed it rebooted a couple times, and then I got that screen that said, "We've updated your computer, and the background's changing colors," just like it did when it first upgraded to Windows 10.
Right.
And I'm going, oh, that's the Creators update, obviously. You know,
right.
I'm not going to get a cumulative update that's going to do that.
Right.
So it did what it did, and it rebooted. And after a long time, and I get no background picture. My my quick launch is blank. My system tray is just about blank, and I can't open anything.
Wow. Welcome to Windows.
So I had to do a reboot. Did a reboot, and then I got the same desktop that came up, but all it did was flash back and forth, just flashed on and off. So I said, well, that didn't work out well, so I was kind of disparaged, and I turned the computer off, and I left it for a few days. Then I went back, and I tried to boot into safe mode. Could not get into safe mode at all. I said, this is interesting. So I ended up, the only way I could get into that screen to get into safe mode was to go and switch users, go down to the power button, press shift, and restart.
Yep.
And I went into troubleshooting instead of safe mode, and I had to do a system restore.
Yep.
Thank God after almost an hour, it restored my system.
Yep, yep. I'm afraid that's not uncommon.
What a mess.
It's a horrible mess, and part of it has to do how new or old is your system?
Well, it's older. It's from 2012.
Yeah. So,
you know,
frankly, Microsoft probably never tested anything past 2 years old at the most.
Right.
And honestly doesn't care.
Right, because when I did upgrade to Windows 10, and it's a gateway, they did say at the gateway site that I could update this to 10
right.
at the time. But now I'm sure things have changed a lot in 2 years.
Well, not yes. They've certainly changed a lot in 2 years, and in addition to that, Microsoft is now, you know, starting to block older processors and older machines. So you've got a limited lifespan anyway.
Right.
For Windows on that machine. Now, you know, how you handle that is up to you, whether you buy a new machine or you start using Linux or Cloud Ready or, you know, something other Windows.
I've got a Chromebook, which is fine, but there are programs I do need to run, and that's, you know, a few of them, and that's where it's going to get hairy because all the programs aren't going to run on Linux.
Well, it depends on what you run and whether or not there are alternatives to that.
Yeah.
There's a website called alternative2.net where you can type in the name of a program and it will tell you if there are equivalents in other operating systems.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
Including, there we go there. But now the problem is they are not giving me a way to not let this Creators update come in. The only solution I found online is they said, well, switch your computer to, say, a Wi-Fi connection, which I can do, and then go into metered connections and, you know, turn on metered, and then you won't get any updates for a while.
Right, but only for a while.
Yeah, you know, only for a while, and said let them make a few adjustments and a few, you know, things to the updates, and then go back and update your computer. I don't know if that would serve me well or not.
Well, yes and no. The reality is that at some point your system is going to update anyway.
Right.
And it's not going to update to the old stuff. It's going to update to the newest stuff. So you'd spend a lot of time going into and out of metered mode, which, it, again, that's entirely up to you how you handle that. But, you know, for a lot of people, they just, they're either living with it as it is and planning to buy another computer in a couple of years, or they're moving to an alternate operating system, at least to play with and try.
Give Microsoft a heave-ho.
Yep. Yep,
I'm just about there. I'm sick and tired of their heavy-handed tactics and their, you know.
Well, what you can do, like you know, I've said before, you know, you can disconnect that machine and get yourself a Chromebook. Your Chromebook, you hook up to the internet.
He's already got a Chromebook.
Yeah, I've got a Chromebook.
Well, then do you just use that as your main source of getting on the internet, moving around, and anything else? That other computer just becomes just that, a dumb terminal. It just does not go out into the internet. You use it for whatever it can, you know, not hooked up to the computer, whether it's running other particular software, say like Quicken or QuickBooks or whatever, photo programs and all that. Because you can always, if you're trying to worry about getting photos or this type of stuff, you can always, off your Chromebook, save the photos or whatever to a flash drive and then move them over to your desktop if you want to alter them.
Right, right.
You know, so you got different alternatives. And like I say, you can actually, you know, get away from Windows and it pestering you as whether they're doing this update or that update, and just stick with the version that's on it. It's running fine, fine. Just disconnect it from the internet, and then it's not going to go looking for anything.
Right. But right. In the meantime, check out alternative2.net.
And, I will.
And see if, you know, you can find, there are, I have a friend who has nothing but a Chromebook. He edits audio. He edits video. He does dang near everything you would ever want to do. He's just found the right programs. It took a little searching to find the programs that he needed and liked the feature set of, right? But once he was done forever.
Right.
So
the other question I have for you is, a couple of weeks ago, a gentleman called, had a Chromebook, and said, you know, he does certain things on a Chromebook and certain things on his Windows machine. And one thing he said he didn't do was banking on his Chromebook. Is there any reason not to do banking on your Chromebook?
No. Yeah. If it's online banking, absolutely no reason not to.
Or buying stuff from, say, Amazon?
Yeah, I do that all the time. And, in fact, I think it's safer. Because the likelihood of having any sort of virus or problem on a Chromebook is significantly less than the same on a Windows machine. So
right. So it's as easy as, I'll say I'm a little worried, reboot it, go back on and start doing my stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. Like I said, I think I'm going to give Windows the heave-ho.
Well, you're not alone. A lot of people are scared. Or at the very least, trepidatious, we should say, but are seriously considering it because they feel that Microsoft's being, as you said, heavy-handed about this.
Yeah, and I don't feel so great about their product that I'd want to even consider giving them a subscription.
Right.
You know, there's other things I'd rather have a subscription to.
Right.
You know, there's no value there for me in a subscription.
Yep.
You know.
Yep, well, I absolutely understand.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great Easter.
You too.
Bye-bye.
We hear a lot from customers who basically, like him, you know, wake up one day or come back to their computer and everything is different. And they grumble and they complain, but they don't do anything about it.
Right.
We don't like to change. We don't like change, and we don't like to change the change.
Right.
So Windows keeps changing itself without your permission. Stop using Windows is too much of a change.
Right. But what people don't realize is they're smarter than they think they are. You know, making that change, you learn Windows, you can certainly learn another operating system. You may not want to. I absolutely understand that. But that doesn't mean you can't or even shouldn't. There's a whole deal with that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Vic from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Vic, what's up?
Hi, I hope I don't sound real dumb with this question, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway.
Nope. Yep.
Well, when you go to your local fast food place and you have your smartphone and you turn your Wi-Fi on, you automatically connect.
Yep.
And connecting without a password, I know, isn't very safe.
Right.
Now, my dumb question is, if you use your data plan and don't connect, is that any safer?
Ish.
Yeah. There's gambles with everything.
It's harder to tap the cellular signal, but not impossible.
Right, right. In fact,
one of the easiest ways is the bad guy has a fake cell tower in his bag and at mm-hmm. the next table, and then your phone talks to it instead of the real cell tower.
Right. So neither is more secure or insecure than the other way. Where you want to work is making sure that when you are doing anything out in public, no matter what way you're connecting, that you do it with HTTPS.
Yeah, that I'm aware of.
Yeah. That is what will keep you safe now, safer. Certainly there are weak encryption. You can go places. HTTPS encrypts the signal, right? But it depends on how strong the encryption is at the end you're going to. You go to places like banks and Google and like that, and they're very highly encrypted. It's not a big issue. That you any encryption can be broken, but this would take decades, if not centuries. Whereas you know some weaker ones can be broken in months, if years, if not months.
Okay. One last thing. I'm on Amazon site right now, and I see something in like an orange where the lock is for security. It says the connection is not secure.
Right.
That's pretty weird for Amazon, isn't it?
Well, you can go to Amazon in any one of a dozen ways now. You can go with or without encryption. You can go to smile.amazon.com and a whole bunch of other things. So which way you connect is based on how you go in. So what I tell people is now, instead of just typing in amazon.com, you physically type in https://amazon.com.
Oh, okay. I'll start doing that.
And then bookmark that so that it always goes to the HTTPS version.
Okay. I never thought about that. Thank you very much, Nick.
Yeah, Burr, my pleasure. Have fun.
Thank you.
And should we set up sound bites for Smile? Apple Cider, the Mac users group that I help run. In fact, we have a meeting today at the JCC at 3 o'clock when we're done here. So Amazon has this service called Amazon Smile, and they will donate money to a charity of your choice for everything you purchase. And so far, Amazon has donated $46 million to charities. If you run a charity, a 501c3 nonprofit organization, you can get your charity listed and then have your members, you know, whenever they buy stuff on Amazon, there's no extra cost to them, but then Amazon donates some money. And Apple Cider has links on their webpage for donating through the Smile Foundation. So you just use that link, and then it takes you to Smile, and you can set up the charity of your choice to get money from your purchases.
We should actually see if Jazz 90.1 is in Smile.
That could be, too. Let me search
for
that.
All right, well, think about that, but in the meantime, we'll go back to the phones. Our next caller is Lee from Hilton, New York. Hi, Lee. What's up?
Hey, guys. I'm a fairly experienced developer, 30-plus years.
Oh, is that all?
I hate to say that.
You started when you were 9, though, Lee, so it's okay.
Yes, I was a child prodigy.
Yeah.
Mostly Unix, DEC, Windows for the last 25-plus years, worked for Microsoft for a while. So very comfortable. I have a Mac. And I feel like a moron.
We're sorry. He went to the dark side.
It's not that I'm going to the dark side. It's more, you know.
It's different.
I need to expand my knowledge base.
Sure.
So what I want to do, so as I said, I'm comfortable with Unix, Linux. So, you know, I know I have my home directory, whatever it is, WAC, user, whatever. Now I've loaded VS Code, Visual Studio Code, which is an open sourced Visual Studio text editor,
right,
for doing development. And I've typed out a Bash shell script.
Yep.
I want to save it. I go save as, and it only gives me a certain number of choices. I figured out how to get my home folder in there, but I want to drill down. I like to have a folder hierarchy. I don't want to have everything just in my home directory. I want to have projects.
Right. You're probably in the simplified save box, which is designed for beginners so they don't get overwhelmed by too many folders. On the right side of the text area where you type your name, there's a little down arrow. You tap that down arrow, you get a full window and full directory structure that you can get to.
Lee, hold on. We have to take a quick break, but stay on the line. Okay? All right. We're back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Lee from Hilton, New York, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported. Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Lee from Hilton on the line. Go ahead.
Right. So I can't find. I didn't quite understand what Steve said.
Right.
On the right hand side, where my name is, I don't see my name anywhere.
Not your name. The text box where you type in the name of the file you want.
Ah. So if I do a
save as.
Just do something. Do save as. Okay.
And then you've got the text box where you type the name you want to save it as.
Yes.
And to the right of that is a little down arrow.
Yes.
Tap that, and you'll get a full desktop finder window with all your folders and your complete file structure.
Hallelujah. Is there a way to set this so that it's default?
It will stay that way all the time until you turn it off.
Oh, beautiful.
You win.
Thank you.
Yep.
And I wanted the previous caller that was having issues with the creator's update.
Yeah.
I've had three machines update. I have, of course, many friends that have had their machines update, coworkers, and there hasn't been any issue.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if he has some sort of a very old, unsupported video card, possibly.
Well, there's really several things that cause this to happen. One is if there is a corruption in the registry.
Mm-hmm.
The registry remains the single stupidest idea Microsoft ever had. And believe me when I tell you the bar is high.
I would disagree with you because I've seen worse than that, but okay.
Yeah.
Well, the point is, because it's all in one file and because every program on the face of the earth writes to it, the likelihood that somebody writes to it badly is very high.
And when you remove something from Windows, it doesn't necessarily remove all the registry entries. And so they're hiding in there, and say you have a device that's now incompatible, but you removed it 2 years ago.
Right.
There's the registry entry is still there, and you load your Windows update, and it'll crash.
Yep. And so that's why we've been recommending Revo on Installer, which will pare down on your registry. But even so, it's a dumb idea. But at any rate, the point is it's often that. It could certainly now be an out-of-band processor. It could be a glitch in memory. Older machines often have them. And generally speaking, they don't really bother anything. Same with hard drive glitches, they don't really bother anything, but it seems the updates are very sensitive to them. So, the reason is the reason could be multitudinous.
But I think it's important that I don't want people to be so afraid of this update that they think it's going to destroy them.
No, I agree. It is an incredibly small percentage of people who are having problems.
But that, because of the installed base of Windows, that's a very large number.
It's still a large number, but percentage-wise, you would take those odds against dang near anything, So if you were in Vegas and they said we're going to give you the same odds of getting a good Windows update, you'd take them, no question at all. So yeah.
But great. I also want to let you know I became a member 2 weeks ago.
Bless you.
And while I disagree with a lot of the anti-Microsoft rants, I do enjoy listening to you guys. You're very entertaining.
Thank you.
And
I'm not a Microsoft hater. I never have been. What I am bothered by is that a company that size with that much money still gets it wrong so often. It's not about how good the product is. It's about how much better the product should be at this point.
And I won't say anything over the air. If you want to meet sometime for a cocktail, I can probably give you a number of reasons why that's the case.
Yeah. No, I understand that. Thank you, Lee.
But ultimately, you know, I'm, you know, I'll probably be telling everybody who I am now that's listening that knows me, but, you know, I'm an Azure guy. I was on the Azure team.
Right.
I'm very pro, you know, using the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't own a Chromebook, if my father was still alive, I mean, he had a computer, and I would probably get him a Chromebook because all he needed to do was email and surf the web.
Right. Depending on what it is you do and how it is you do it, there are a number of alternatives nowadays that will save a lot of people money.
It sounds
like the Microsoft has been talking about a Chromebook-like product for their next Surface.
Well, they tried that with the Surface RT,
yep.
The first version of the Surface. I have one. It's not even big enough to be a doorstop, so... I'm not quite sure. I guess I could, you know, if it didn't melt, I could use it for a, you know, coaster. But the thing is that if you look at what Microsoft is doing, just all up as a company, embracing open source. If somebody had told me 10 years ago there would be Visual Studio for the Mac, I would have laughed at them.
Yep, and I agree with you. My anti-Microsoft rhetoric has, I believe at least, softened significantly in the last number of decades. And it's because Microsoft has, at least in some respects, changed. You're right. They're embracing open source. They're embracing the cloud with products like Azure, which is an excellent product. They've made Office available online. So they're doing, you know, they've really changed as a company from the days when they were locking down and Apple was locking down and, you know, and Linux was pretty much the only thing that let you do what you wanted to do. They've significantly changed. Both Apple and Microsoft have significantly changed in the past decade and a half. So I can't fault that. That's great stuff. And I see it continuing.
And that's, you know, that's, and the key is that while I have yet to see anything that says that if you, whenever they start charging for an operating system, that if you stopped paying for it, your computer would stop working. I think that if they do that, they're committing corporate suicide.
I agree.
That would be a mistake of what we've seen this past week of what the CEO of United has been doing.
Right.
That's, you know, you don't destroy your customer base in an effort to make small money.
Right.
And
I believe what they will do at worst, and this is at worst, if you stop paying for it, you'll be unable to create new documents, but you'll still be able to access your old documents.
And we've seen something similar in the past when the Windows Genuine Advantage first came out.
Right.
If your computer suddenly thought it wasn't genuine, all you could do was open the web browser and go to Microsoft's web page to buy Windows.
Yes.
And that would happen when the Microsoft server was down, when your internet was down. It could happen all sorts of things for legal, legitimate Windows.
Right.
And that made everyone really mad. And so hopefully they won't...
They won't make that same mistake again. Right, right.
No, let's make all new mistakes.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think the good news is they tend to learn from their mistakes.
Yes, they do. They have shown that in the past over and over and over again. You know what they say? The history of any Microsoft product is people laugh at it, people use it, Microsoft wins.
I remember it was about a year and a half ago. You said something very positive about a Windows phone. I almost drove off the road.
I don't hate Microsoft. It bothers me that a company with that much power isn't better at what they do. But they've been getting better. And I've always said that. The company 20 years ago is not the company today.
But any company that gets big and gets overblown makes mistakes. Google makes mistakes. Apple makes mistakes.
Yep. I mean, yep.
It's the problem of large organizations.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And we're sort of seeing a weird and annoying example from Facebook is they make a change to something, everyone hates it. Facebook says sorry and leaves it the way it was.
Yep.
And so you have to get used to the new thing.
Right. Right. But you're right. Microsoft is a very different company than it was 20 years ago. And I like it much better as a company than I did 20 years ago. I'm still probably never going to pay them for a version of their operating system, but that's a whole other story.
I mean, that's what you prefer.
And, right.
You know, I mean, I'm very comfortable using Visual Studio as my development environment. I'm spreading out to other. I'm doing Node.js now, and I'm doing all these other things just because, I'm finding out in the world, especially that Azure takes all players, that the vast majority of new resources that are being deployed in Azure are Linux-based.
Yep.
And are running Python, Node, Ruby, PHP, et cetera.
Right. And on the Mac, you're going to run those in Swift.
I can use C Sharp with Xamarin.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, they've open sourced the .NET framework.
Right.
.NET Core everything's all open source now.
Right.
So, you can build .NET apps on Linux.
Yes, you can.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's what language do you choose to do it in?
Right. Right.
As I work for I work in that realm, and I talk to customers, and they say, I'm not a .NET shop. I do this. I need to be. Can I do this in Azure? Yeah. Well, yes, you can. And here's how you can do it. And I want to be able to go in with a Mac and say, you can use a Mac to do all this too. So
especially with the importance of the internet these days, and the multiple different clients that connect to it, when you develop software, you really want it to run on Mac and Windows and Linux and Android and iOS. Just to have that big audience to get to your software.
Yeah, you got
to
be able to help all the people out.
Yep.
Yep.
Good for you, Lee.
Yep. Well, great. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your help, Steve.
Yep.
I was ready to throw this thing out the window.
There's a few of those things in the Mac where it's simplified for new users, but there's an expanded way to get to it.
Yep. Well, I wouldn't even have thought to click that little down arrow, so thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks.
You guys have a great Easter.
You too. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I do often rag on Microsoft, and I admit that, but I do not hate the company at all.
It's constructive criticism.
I think so, and certainly, or just humor. But the reality is that Microsoft is doing things now that we never would have seen before. And Lee is correct. I mean, Microsoft embracing open source? What is that even about?
Yep.
Yeah, but here's my point with Microsoft. And again, it's a track record that they've made for themselves.
Right.
They sit there and they'll bring on a product, or they introduce a product, or they'll take one over, support it for a while, and then all of a sudden abandon it.
Yep. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that Google does it too. Google's thrown away some of my favorite products, frankly. And I hate that about them. So, yeah, there's a lot I beg your pardon. There's a lot of that goes on in the corporate world. And sadly, I'm that way with television shows. I'll guarantee you, if I like a show, it's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. Firefly is my fault, and I admit that. there's no question of that. And it's I don't know, maybe it's just that I'm quirky, and the stuff that I like is just not mainstream enough for everybody, but man.
Well, and the advantage now is that there are so many other channels, Netflix and Hulu and direct internet and podcasting that a lot of these highly critically acclaimed shows that didn't have the popular audience are available. You get a show on Netflix and you got 10 million people watching it every week. Well, that's huge
for Netflix.
For Netflix, yeah.
It's not even noticeable for a network show.
Right.
Right. Right. And the same thing is true of things like Windows and the Mac and Linux. There are so many alternatives now. If you love Windows, by all means use it. Absolutely. We're here to support you with that. If you love a Mac, by all means use it. We're here to support you with that. If you love Linux, by all means use it. If you, same thing, all of them. We're here to support you. We're here not just support you with help, but support you as a user. We're happy that you're using that operating system. We don't care what it is. I'll gig all of them because I think all of them could and should be better. I am so delighted that Ubuntu is killing Unity. Jeez and crackers, that was a horrifying, terrible, miserable, no good, lousy thing. And on that note, we're going to take another break. We're done with our first hour of this show. But we're only halfway through the misery, so you have another chance to do it all over again. We're going to take a slightly longer break, and then we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be taking more of your calls and all that other nonsense that we do as we continue on again with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the Truly Great, and let me tell you one more time how truly grateful we are to all of you who have supported us on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We have a news item here. Tuesday was patch day for Microsoft, and it was an important one. A zero-day code execution vulnerability in Microsoft Office is one of three critical flaws under attack in the wild. Microsoft warned us about this as it rolled out a batch of updates that plugged some of those security holes. Attackers are exploiting the flaw to infect unsuspecting Word users with bank fraud malware known as DryDex. Blog posts published Tuesday morning by security firm Netskope and FireEye reported that attackers are exploiting the same bug to install malware with names like Godzilla and LatenBot. Ryan Hansen, who's a researcher with security firm Optive, and the person Microsoft credits with reporting the critical bug, said exploits can execute malicious code even when a mitigation known as Protected View is disabled, is enabled. The attacks are able to bypass other exploit mitigation programs as well. That was smooth. According to Microsoft, flaws in two other products are also being exploited in the wild. One is an Internet Explorer vulnerability that allows attackers to access sensitive information from one domain and inject it into another address. Such elevation of privilege vulnerabilities are typically exploited along with an additional attack exploiting a separate bug so that attack chains can bypass a security sandbox or similar security protections. Microsoft said the IE bug is being exploited, but it didn't elaborate. The third zero-day also resides in Office 2016, 2013, and 2010, and wasn't actually patched in Tuesday's update batch. According to guidance for the flaw, Microsoft is aware of limited targeted attacks. This is going to make Lee very unhappy. Microsoft is aware of limited targeted attacks that could leverage an unpatched vulnerability in the encapsulated PostScript filter, and is taking this action to help reduce customer risk until the security update is released. The flaw is exploited when a target opens a malicious EPS image in Word encapsulated PostScript. In all, Microsoft released 15 updates on Tuesday. patching dozens of individual flaws in software, including the Windows operating system Exchange server. And here's a shock. Hope you're sitting down. Grab the wheel. Adobe Flash. It's always a good idea to install updates as soon as possible. The active attacks on three separate Microsoft products makes that advice particularly important this month. So are you up to date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Did you see some of the competition winners in the current most recent Pwn to Own? They were doing four or five chained exploits to break everything. You know, they broke Ubuntu this time.
Yep.
They broke out of a VMware virtual machine and were able to attack the host operating system. Several millions of dollars in prize money were awarded. And one of the sort of the underlying fears is that the government will make security research illegal in fear and to combat, you know, the bad guys releasing exploits, but we need the good guys to find these holes and fix them. The big concern is that because companies are now offering so much money for finding these exploits, that they're not telling the company about them
Till the contest.
Until the contest, yeah. And so, especially the 0 days, like Nick was mentioning, that Windows just patched, 0 day means they were being used in the wild before they were ever discovered. How long ago were they discovered by someone waiting for a research contest to come?
Right.
And then with the CIA release last month, all of the patches there that companies had already done. But we know that a lot of machines never get updated. In fact, Cisco. So all the computer companies are looking through these leaked CIA documents to see what's going on, and Cisco found a previously unknown 0 day exploit in their own routers.
Yep.
And had to patch some of their routers. So the CIA knew about these exploits, did not tell the company to fix them in case they needed to break into that company.
Right. Right. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Hi, Dennis. What's up?
Hi. By the way, I am a Jazz-O-Matic member. I have been for quite a while now, so just want to let you know that.
Bless you, Dennis. Thank you.
After your news thing about Windows 10, I'm wondering whether I'm up the creek without a paddle. I have been running a Hewlett-Packard Windows 7 machine, which I've been very happy with. So I ordered and received a little bit newer Hewlett-Packard machine refurbished with Windows 10 on it. And I was going to set it up today. And it's got an AMD A8-5500 processor. And I don't know if that's considered old or not so old. Can I go in there and will I be able to update that? I don't know how long ago Windows 10 was put on that machine from the refurbisher person. Should I expect problems in updating or not?
Maybe.
maybe. The A8-5500 is a quad-core 3.2 gigahertz FM2 socket machine, so it's fairly new.
Yeah, it's pretty decent.
So I'm not sure you're going to have problems for a while.
Okay.
It's not terribly new, but you should be okay for a while. I really, at this point, nobody knows.
Yes.
I hate to say that, but nobody knows. They've talked about, Microsoft has talked about which Intel chips they're going to stop supporting, but they haven't talked about the equivalency of AMD chips.
And go to that manufacturer.
Yeah, because you've got a manufacturer's machine, you should be able to go to the manufacturer's website for that model and check. Now, the problem now is you can't just check to see if it's Windows 10 compatible. You need to check if it's Windows 10 Creator Update compatible,
because
that's the problem. Some early Windows 10 machines, which are compatible with Windows 10, are not compatible with the latest Creator Update.
Okay.
Got to do your homework.
Theoretically, Microsoft.
A long time ago, that once someone starts running Windows 10, you don't have a choice. You have to let it update automatically. Is that correct?
Well, it is if you want to stay current. So, for example, like we said, Microsoft has announced this week that older versions of Windows 10 will stop updating them for anything, and in particular for security patches. So if you have not updated Windows 10, you're just going to not get any updates, including security. So you need to be moving ahead. And we know a lot of people are very proud of the fact that they got Windows 10 and then stopped doing the updates. And that's great, but Microsoft is now finally explicitly saying you will be vulnerable.
Okay, it sounds like the way I'm going to stay safe is to let it update, and as long as it's updating, then each time a new version comes out or whatever, then it should handle that, I gather, I hope.
Yeah, that's the theory, certainly. Yeah. You know, the AMD A8 5500 was really from 2012, so that's 5 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very good question. I guess the reality is we don't know at this point.
And theoretically, the Windows compatibility checker should check for that before it loads the update, which is also nice in theory.
Yeah, theoretically it should, yes.
Is it in theory? There's no difference between theory and practice? But in practice, there is?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, but now I would assume that the refurbisher person, this is Windows 10 is on that box right now, and I'm assuming it's going to work, that the refurbisher would have done something if it didn't work or something. He wouldn't send it out. I wouldn't.
Yeah, there's no way to know if the next version will work or not.
Here's the other thing that I would be a little concerned.
And what we're by saying the next version, the Creator update was released on April 11th.
But here's the other concern that I would have. One, is there an image on some part of that hard drive that if it doesn't work, that he's able to go back to day one?
Make sure you have a good backup.
Or does he have a CD with a key code, a valid key code, to wind up going back to?
Right. So if something
Because otherwise,
go wrong.
He can go ahead and do that update, and like that previous caller that we had a while ago, wind up doing an update, but he had to go all the way back. And if you don't have that set up correctly, and you got to go back to square one, I've got a machine right now that somehow or another it got mucked up. It's an all-in-one, and there's no image that I can use to restore the machine.
Right.
So the person's SOL, unless they send it back to the manufacturer, because the image on the actual hidden partition is trashed.
So, yeah. So you may want to download the Windows image.
Yep.
Save that separately.
Right. You can download the Windows image from Microsoft's website. And you can download it and put it on a USB or whatever in order to then install it on the system. And at that point, as long as you have a legitimate serial number, you can restore the system by wiping it out and putting a brand new copy on.
The other thing, though, you're going
to need to make sure I do that I download the Windows image directly from Microsoft and keep that handy if I need it.
And the other thing that you're going to want to take the time to do is go to that particular manufacturer and get the other drivers, whether they're for networking or sound cards or video, and put those in a separate folder themselves. Along with that image.
On a separate machine, like a flash drive, if you can. So if that machine dies, you still have that flash drive with those downloads.
Yeah, because you're going to want, you know, the main one that you're going to minimally want is once you get that machine back up running is the networking CD drivers. So that you can reconnect to the internet and get the rest of the drivers that you need, whether they be video or sound or whatever.
Right. And with HP, when you can go to their website and put your serial number in. The serial number of the machine, not the Windows number, any of that stuff. The serial number of the machine, and it will tell you what the latest drivers are for every version of Windows. And you can download them directly from there. And you should do that either before you upgrade or on
anything.
A separate machine or, you know, however. But you should always have a recent copy of those files on hand as well.
Okay. Okay, I will take that. I will do all of that. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, good luck.
Bye.
Bye. And now I'm with him. I have a refurbished Dell that I got off of Woot. It's a very similar machine, 8-core, blah, 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 blah. But I'm running Linux, so I don't worry about that other stuff. But I would have done exactly that same thing had I been running Windows. I would have not only downloaded the Windows 10 image from Microsoft and then recorded somewhere off the machine my Windows serial number. But I also would have downloaded the Dell drivers for Windows 10 for that specific machine by, again, going to their website and plugging in the serial number of that machine to the system. So that's the kind of thing that you should always do for any of those machines.
And before any major update is installed, make sure you have a good backup. Even the best intended updates might have a hiccup in them, and you could end up with an unbootable machine.
Yeah, honestly, the problem is that the days of just fire and forget with laptops and desktops is gone.
Yeah.
Unless you have a Chromebook. You need, and the same is true to a lesser extent on Apple machines and on Linux machines. Always have backups of everything, certainly your data, but also whatever drivers that you plan on using. Make sure you know where you would get them if you needed them again. It's less of a problem on Macs because they run, Apple makes the hardware as well as the software. So there's less of a problem there. But you want to be aware that, you know, hard drives die. And you
just
you
when you don't want them to either.
Right.
Yeah, they
right.
tend to know when it's a bad time.
Right. Right. You're right. And Woot has Apple.
Has Apple's on there today.
Products on it today. MacBook Pro. Now I suspect that's the older version.
Yeah,
of the one that just stopped existing. But you know, if I had $1,500, I'd buy one of those and put Linux on it. Frankly,
I like to limit three per customer.
Three per customer. Like they would be upset if you wanted to send them another $1,500 for another one. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites and the truly great and truly grateful to be member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
At 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Andy from Greece on the line. Hi, Andy. How are you today?
Doing well, Nick. I hope everybody's doing well.
Good.
Since you haven't been asking, I'm going to assume FunDrive was completed successfully.
Yeah, we said that at the top. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't say it at the top of the second hour. The fund drive, we raised our $55,000.
Congratulations.
Which we needed to do. So thank you to each and every person who was kind enough become a member of the station or upgrade their membership or just throw us a few bucks. We appreciate that. And out of the 3,911 people who download the podcast every week, we had approximately 50 who were kind enough to become members. So we want to thank each of them. And we could do so individually and still have plenty of time for the show. That's the pledge drive is over.
Well, that's fantastic news on a lot of different levels.
Yeah.
I had a point I wanted to get to, but a couple things came up while I've been listening. When it comes to picking television shows and liking them and then having them canceled out from under you,
yeah.
I'm there with you and I feel your pain.
Thank you.
I can do it like a champ. I can tell you which shows are going to crash every year because they're the ones I like the best.
Yep.
Picking on Microsoft, they have incredibly large shoulders because of who they are and what they've done, so it's kind of fun to pick on Billy and the boys. But when they give you when they put out winners like 3.11, XP, 7, and 10, and then have such spectacular flameouts in between, it kind of makes it easy to pick on them.
Yeah, it is true that they've had a number of spectacular winners and a number of spectacular failures. And a number of spectacular failures, which are Dave's favorites.
Mm-hmm.
One starts with M, the other starts with V.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, but you're right, and look at lately though, we went from 7 to 10 without an interim. We had 8, a little bit of 8.
Yeah, but look at the lawsuits right now within 10.
It's so hard to use.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. There's lawsuits on 10, and it's just
because people were getting updates whether they wanted it or not, and their machines were totally trashed.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I'm not saying the 10 is perfect. But knock on petrified wood here, meaning the rocks between my ears.
Yeah.
Both my machines that run Windows so far, I'll qualify that, so far,
yeah,
have been able to digest the updates and seem to run with them. It just takes a while for it to chew through all the, getting all the stuff in there and process it and whatnot. But I've got 2 i7 machines, so I'm hoping I'll be stable for a while.
Right.
Now, to the what I called about, now that I've gotten all the stuff that came up while I was listening, gentleman called and said he'd heard me talk a couple weeks about how I use my Chromebook for surfing and my Windows machine for bill paying.
Yeah.
The reason, there is a method to my madness. The Windows box gets used for internal stuff inside the house where I have internal documents that I work on, spreadsheets, whatever, that I keep inside and I don't broadcast anywhere. I also use for my bill paying. I go in and I go right to the site. I really don't do any extraneous surfing. I strictly go right to the site that I want to go to, and that's because since I've had my Chromebook for 2 years now, I find that surfing is quicker, easier, and a lot more worry free. Because if I don't like something, I just turn it off.
Right.
So it's I kind of go with the Chromebook because of its inherent security, for lack of a better term.
That's a good term.
It, I feel more comfortable going, let's go look at this site, even though it's not one I've been to before. If something doesn't look right, I can turn it off. I turn it on the next time, and I haven't put my passwords in there. I haven't put my account numbers in there. I haven't done anything with it other than use it to surf.
Yep.
Then I don't worry about it.
There you go.
So there's a method to my madness, not because I don't trust the security on the Chromebook, because I do. It's just that I've decided that sooner or later I'm going to wind up everything's going to be on the Chromebook anyway. But for now, I'll keep my Windows box doing the stuff that I need to do and just go to the sites that I trust.
Right, right. Excellent.
Not that that's a perfect scenario, but I feel comfortable with it.
It's a good, listen, if it makes you happy, it's a good way to do it, and
it's what you're comfortable
everybody
with.
Wins.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I have checked my hard drive partitions to see the size of the files, and nothing really has changed or moved, and they're all pretty small, so nobody's camped out on my hard drive so far.
Right. All right, excellent. Thanks, Andy.
So you guys have a good Easter, and hopefully the Easter Bunny brings you all the treats you're looking for.
Yep, that's the hope.
Yeah.
Thanks, Andy.
Have a good one.
Yep, bye-bye. You too. Bye-bye.
And I finally found the tech note I was searching for at Microsoft that lists the processors that are not compatible with Windows 7. And the latest Windows 7 updates. It's the Intel 7th generation Kaby Lake. The AMD 7th generation Bristol Ridge. So what generation was the previous caller's AMD processor? And the Qualcomm 8996. So if you have a brand new 7th gen processor, you cannot run Windows 7 on it. You must run Windows 10.
Right. Right.
Which is frustrating for people that want brand new computers but still use the OS they're familiar with.
Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ken from Webster, New York. Hi, Ken. What's up?
Good afternoon. There's been a lot of serious conversation about computers today, and that's good. And it's also a holiday nearing us.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell you about two people that if they hadn't existed, there wouldn't be any holiday. So here it is. The first computer can be traced back to Adam and Eve.
Here we go.
It was an Apple, but with a very limited memory. Only one byte, and then everything crashed.
Boom, boom. Thank you. It'll be here all week. Tip your waitstaff.
That's all I got for you. I thought it was time for a little bit of humor.
I like that. Thanks, Ken.
Okay, guy.
That's very funny, actually. I will admit that that's not one I've heard. I know a lot of
That's
religious. I spent time in the seminary, so I've heard every religious joke that there is to hear. Most of which are not repeatable in any kind of company. Most of which I heard from priests. So.
Priest and a rabbi walk into a bar, and the bartender says, "What is this, a joke?"
Yeah.
Talking to
Grasshopper walks into a bar, jumps up on a stool, and orders a drink. Bartender says, "That's really quite a coincidence. We have a drink named after you." And the grasshopper says, "You got a drink named Irving?" Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I've always heard that one, Phil.
No, talking about canceling shows, I just got hooked on one due to my wife. Outlanders?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Man, she's got me hooked on that. We're into the second season of it.
But that'll be on for 20 years because I don't watch it.
Sure. Oh, good.
But don't stop watching Powerless. I'm telling you that right now.
All right. We'll put that on our do not watch list.
Yeah. It's although I am watching all the Marvel stuff on Netflix. So.
Oh, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No, well, Daredevil and Jessica Jones and all of that stuff. So,
yeah.
And the Defenders is coming up, and I would like to see the She-Hulk and a couple of others. But
did you see the trailer for Ragnarok?
I did.
What?
Planet Hulk.
Planet Hulk. Yeah.
I'm so.
I know him. He's from work. He's a work friend. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been waiting for Planet Hulk for the longest time. I suspect it's only a subplot to the other stuff, but I'm really looking forward to it. Anyway, here's another news item. Apple's already has plans to design its own graphics chip for the iPhone, but the company isn't stopping there. Apple is putting together a team to design its own battery management chip for the iPhone. By designing its own chips, Apple could go a bit further than the standard power management chip, making the iPhone a bit more efficient when it comes to power usage. This way, the company could beat Android makers when it comes to battery life, which currently it's mostly not doing, depending on the model. But, of course, there are about a billion models of Android phones. Apple currently works with German supplier Dialog Semiconductor. Dialog says that the company has already designed the power management chips for the next two iPhones, in 2017 and 2018, so don't expect to see changes anytime soon. But things could change in 2019 as Apple could be putting together its own team in Germany. The company has been poaching Dialog engineers to join Apple. Apple sells tens of millions of iPhones every year. Today's news could have a big impact on Dialog. That's why Dialog shares are currently trading down about 15%. That's yesterday. I don't know what they're at today. It's interesting to see that Apple is moving down its supply chain and replacing its most important suppliers one by one. Apple wants to control everything about its iPhone, and it seems logical, given that it is by far the company's most successful device. The question remains, however, what steps can Apple's other suppliers take to remain relevant and vital to Apple? Got any ideas? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 and toll-free 1-800-790-0415. It is true that Apple is trying very hard to control all of their products, and part of that has to do with making them better. But the reality is that if Dialog is making the chip to Apple specifications, Apple could just change the specifications and continue to give them Dialog. What this is really about is controlling costs.
And it's one thing they've already done with some of their CPUs,
right?
Where they're using the ARM specifications, but they're making their own custom ARM design, and then ironically they send it to Samsung for manufacture,
right?
And then there's what is it, TSM? There's a Taiwan semiconductor manufacturing company that's second sourcing the chips, and so instead of buying Samsung's ARM chip, Apple designed their own and have Samsung make it for them.
Which is cheaper for them. That's the idea behind
that. Samsung is such a huge company with so many divisions.
Right. And the same thing with their graphics chips.
Yep.
They've gone through an almost identical process with the graphics chips, and it's the same idea. Now, the big thing is now that's really left, the big expensive chip will be the power management chip. And so that's the next one on the chopping block. So we'll see what comes of that, because there's no telling where Apple's going to go next with that stuff. They want to bring down costs, not that they'll pass those on to us, but because they need to.
Because again, Apple, right. Just like
you're not on.
Just like the Mac is just falling like Windows. You can go into a store right now and see very few desktops. Right. More and more of the stuff is going, and there's been both on the PC side and the Mac side, no real big news about any new changes to systems, operating system, or anything else.
We're kind of at a stagnant chip design. The chips haven't got much faster. They're concentrating on lower power now.
Yeah, right. And
one of the things that it was a little surprising is when Tim, did we mention the last week with the Mac, the new Mac Pro and the new Mac Pro that is coming? Tim Cook's interviews actually gave some specific numbers. Laptops are outselling desktops in the Mac world 80-20.
Yep.
Which is a little higher than in the PC world, which is 75-25 of the last ones I heard. And the Mac Pro, being a very high end machine with a very tiny market, is single digit of that 20%. And one of the articles I read said that they expect it's a lot closer to the 1 single digit than the 9 single digit.
And your estimate on the PC side is also very off, too, because, like I say, you can go into most stores and you might see maybe 3, maybe 4 desktop units where they've got an array of laptops.
Mm-hmm. Some of the all-in-ones, like the Microsoft Surface.
Well, that's included.
It's a laptop with a giant monitor.
Yeah, right.
So technically it's a desktop, but it's really a laptop design.
Right, but what you're seeing is for home use. Home use is a much different ratio than business use. Businesses are still buying a lot of desktops.
Oh, yeah, businesses
are. And laptops, but a lot of desktops.
Because of the laptops having the portability now, and with the cloud, they can take their machines home, take it to, back to work, take it to a meeting, wherever, they're connected.
Right. What we're seeing is that executives and like that are getting laptops, but support people like administrative assistants and like that are getting desktops.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's because the laptops have gotten powerful enough. It used to be you got a laptop for portability and a desktop for power, and you'd use them both.
Right.
And we love that in the computer sales business,
right,
because everyone had to buy two computers.
Right.
But when we're seeing laptops getting the power, dual core, quad core i7s, and having as much power as a desktop, now you've got a portable computer, and when you get back to your office, say you plug into a bigger monitor and full size keyboard and whatnot.
Right.
So it's fewer machines you have to purchase, and you get that power and portability.
And we're seeing
it usually costs half again more or double what a desktop would.
And we're seeing people using tablets and Chromebooks because they are less.
They're outselling desktops and laptops put together.
Exactly. Because you can still get all that power online, and yet the device costs you less. Going to take a quick break. If you're on the line, please stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, 39 minutes after the hour. Sound Bites members of Jazz 9.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Rich from Irondequoit, New York on the line. Hi, Rich. What's up?
Happy holidays, guys, first
you
of
too.
All.
Thank you.
Regarding malware bites, you had a newspaper article recently that said, that you said it's best to use malware bites and virus protection, yes?
Yes.
They do different things.
And super anti-spyware.
So malware bytes and super anti-spyware are sort of the same thing, spyware and malicious software detection.
One checks the registry versus the other checks.
Yeah, they work in companion to each other.
Conjunction. You need both.
An antivirus program searches for viruses, which are on the downturn, but there's still a lot of them floating around.
Oh, yeah, there's...
Right. Many of the antivirus programs are now adding anti-malware to their suites.
And vice versa.
And vice versa. The problem we run into is what we used to talk about with Norton Security Suite. It gets so big and bloated that it slows your machine down. And Norton newer
changed
versions
that.
Came out and changed that.
The way computers work is that small, fast programs, a lot of them are better than one big, bloated, slower program, or even fast program, because of just the way queuing theory works.
I'm using McAfee and the free malware bytes.
Good.
Yeah, that would be fine.
That's a good combination. So having malware bytes is great. Having antivirus is great. Having other things is great. Having all of them is greater.
Yeah, I would still recommend you running super anti-spyware. Just like we were saying, no one program can do it all. And between super anti-spyware and malware bytes, I've found out over the years, they both do a great job at their own individual specialty.
Right.
And that's keeping your machine clean. And
Anti-spyware free?
Yes, it is. And that will constantly run in the background and update.
I will do that. Okay,
so
thank you.
Well, the pay version is running in the background.
They keep asking me if I want to buy the premier issue, I believe is their word.
Right. So the free versions are run on demand. The pay versions run in the background all the time, watching to prevent something from getting in.
Right.
So if you can afford the pay versions, those are nice because they stop things from coming in ahead of time. But the free versions will scan after the fact. Just set up.
Assuming you run the scan every once in a while.
Set up a schedule so Saturdays while you're listening to Soundbites, let the scans run.
And of course, you can use the @ command, a very underused command in Windows. You can set up in Linux, they're called cron tabs, and they're essentially jobs that run at a specific time. And under Windows, that's called the @ command. So you can say
at.
Or the Windows task scheduler.
It's the Windows task scheduler, yeah. So you can actually run the task schedule. Hi. I can't say that word today. The task scheduler. And schedule things to run at specific times. So, for example, if you're one of those people who leaves your machine on all the time, you can run
it's on sleep or hibernate.
Well, no, it's got to be actually running, or you can set it to wake up at those times and do this.
Okay.
So, for example, my machine is on 24/7, so I do a full scan of every single file at 3 a.m.
And this will work with free malware bytes?
You can set it up using schedule a task to do that. It's not quite the same as it's always running in the background, because when it's always running in the background, it's checking every byte that comes in over the Ethernet connection. Scheduling it as a task checks the bytes that are on the disk.
I wish it were cheaper. That's the only issue.
No, I get that. I'm just telling you that's the trade-off.
Yes, I see. Where do I go for the task automatic running thing?
You can right-click on the bar across the bottom, and one of the choices there is Task Manager. No, that's Task Manager.
To see what your tasks are, and then there's an add new task. I just posted
A link.
Thank you. A link to the Microsoft TechNote on how to start a task.
I will do that. Thank you, guys.
There you go.
You're welcome.
You too. We've been saying for years that it is important to make sure that you have a good grasp on what's in your machine and what's running and what shouldn't be running, et cetera, et cetera. As time goes on, you need to become much, much more a system administrator than just a user of the system. And one of the things that you need to get a handle on is that task scheduler, not the task manager, the task scheduler, which you can get at from Steve's little post there. And it will give you the ability to say, oh, you know what? My machine's on all day, and I'm always at lunch at noon, so I can run this at noon. Or, you know, I want to check this at 3 in the afternoon, or my machine's on 24/7, so why don't you do this at 2 a.m.? So you can schedule scans. You can schedule backups. In fact, I have to say, in all honesty, I lied to Rich. I actually do my scans at midnight and my backups at 3 a.m. So that way my system is scanned and only clean files get backed up.
Because that can be an issue if you are infected with a malware or a virus and you back up, now that is in your backup.
Yep. So I'm always careful about that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Wes from Macedon, New York. Hiya, Wes. What's up?
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
Peachy, you?
Good, thanks. Hey, Nick, I've got a question. This has me baffled. I hope you guys can help me figure it out.
But no pressure, right?
No pressure. last week, I upgraded my Time Warner service internet speed from 30 to 60 megabits. And I had to replace my Time Warner modem router box. So I received that last Saturday and went ahead and set it up and configured it for
Dave.
Max filtering and so on and so forth. I heard a laugh in the background.
Well, no, Dave was about to pull the phone onto the floor.
sorry, go ahead.
So I went ahead and got it set up, and everything seemed to work fine. The next day, Sunday, I went in to just double check the settings and look at the configuration. And there's a section in the router configuration setup where you can view your devices that are connected.
Yep.
And their IP addresses.
Yep.
So everything that's connected has a, what I suspect is right, has a 192.168.0.4.5.6.
Right.
And it's with the exception of my wife's iPhone.
It
and
has,
that has a IP address of
really long whole bunch
well,
of
It's
with
not
colons in
192
it.
That I suspected. It's 119-130.51.0. So I suspected there was something wrong right off the bat. So I went in and reconfigured everything again and set it up. And it did connect then. It showed the iPhone connected to 192.168.0. You know, whatever it was, .6 or whatever. But after a few minutes, that would change back to that 119.130.51.0 again. So I went in and changed it again and gave it a static IP address. Rebooted the router, went back in, and it's set for the static address that I gave it. But again, after a few minutes, it reverted back again to that, to that same 119.130.51.0. Everything else is normal. You know, I have a couple iPads hooked up. I have a laptop hooked up. And those all stay at the 192.168.0. You know, whatever, wherever they fall in line. So I was wondering if you guys have any idea at all why that would change on the iPhone?
Not offhand. We're trying to see who 119 is. I
did look that up, and it came up to a Chinese company.
Yeah, I'm getting Philippines.
Yeah, that's okay. That's very weird. I mean, it should be. The IP address of the iPhone should come from your Wi-Fi router.
And you're sure the iPhone is connecting to your router, not your neighbor's router?
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense.
It does. Like I said, for a few minutes, if I reboot the router, it'll show the 192.168.0. I did finally wind up setting it to a static address of 11, and it'll show that for a few minutes, and then it just automatically changes back to that.
See, that makes me unhappy, because once you set a static address, that static address should remain. That's why they call it a static address. So
right.
I'm unhappy here, and I think you should be doing some virus checking and things like that, just to start with. That's
okay.
That's where I would go first.
Okay. All right. That's what I was just wondering, because everything else works okay. My TVs that are connected, my iPads, all those remain at the same addresses, except the iPhone just keeps changing.
Right. I would check that out ahead of time. Unfortunately, I'm afraid we have to go.
Okay, I understand. Happy Easter to you guys.
You
Thank
too.
Thank you very much.
Happy Easter, happy Passover to all of our listeners. We are done for another week, I'm afraid. It's been a joy. Thank you again to all those of you who were so generous as to become members of the station and keep us on the air for another 6 months. We appreciate that beyond belief. And we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 55 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's the truly great. And truly grateful to be member-supported, Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours.